In Shir 42, we are going to begin from where we left off last time, which is a discussion about Shemitah in the latter half of the 19th century. So after the Russian pogroms of 1881, a movement began among Russian Jewry to return to Israel. Those that went supported themselves from the production and the export of wine and fruit. The year 1889 was a Shemitah year. Many of those who moved there, especially those that were part of the Chovev Beit Zion movement, did not think that they could survive the first Shemitah. Now, it should be noted that the Yishuvim were basically supported by Baron Edmund de Rothschild of Paris. He was called the Nidiv HaYadua, the great philanthropist, who we could say was key in the existence of Eretz Yisrael. And just a few years prior to this time, he saved them from economic collapse. Now, Baron Rothschild had administrators in the land who were in charge of overseeing and distributing the baron's funds. They, along with many of the colonists, urged the rabbinate to authorize a heter for those poor and impoverished colonies, or the budding yeshuvim, to be able to work during Shemitah. However, the leaders of the rabbinate, Rav Diskin and Rav Salant, they refused to issue a heter. So a worldwide propaganda fight began, claiming that keeping Shemitah would be pikuach nefesh, and if it was kept, then the new Jewish settlement would be over. In 1888, three Rabbanim got together to discuss the issue, including Rav Shmuel Malver of Bialystok, Rav Trunk of Kutno, and Rav Klefish of Warsaw. They decided that a heter mechira could take place by selling the soil to Arabs for 2 years if those that could hire laborers would hire non-Jews to work, and those Jews who had to work would abide by the rules set up by the rabbinate, who were expected to allow Isurei Dirabanan, but not any Isurei Diraisa. Now, there were two conditions to this heter. One, it was a horas shah, which means that it was temporary, it was only for one Shemitah of the Shemitah of 1889, and two, that the famous Rav of Kovno, Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, would need to agree that the heter could be set up in such a manner. Now, Rav Yitzchak Elchanan agreed to the heter as a one-time temporary measure, and Dayan Grunfeld writes that he agreed in a very guarded manner. Now, as you can imagine, this caused a huge controversy. The Sephardi community approved the heter. The Ashkenazim, headed by Ravs Diskin and Salant, violently opposed the heter, stating that it had no halachic basis. It was also maintained that Rav Yitzchak Elchanan was misled, since he was told that it was a case of pikuach nefesh, and apparently it wasn't quite to that level. Most of the great Lithuanian gedolim, including Rav Salavechik, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the Netziv, Rav David Karliner, Rav Eliezer Gordon of Telsh, and the Admiral Rav Yosef Stern, all opposed the heter. There were many publications against the heter, but let's discuss the Netziv's response as Dayan Grunfeld records it. The Netziv compares the colonists in his time to the inhabitants of Eretz Yisrael in previous generations, and he says that things were actually much worse in previous times. They had no one to support them and could not purchase food from non-Jews, yet they kept Shemitah. The Netziv bitterly complains that at the very beginning of our return to the land, we are trying to wiggle out of keeping Shemitah, which is one of the foundations of the Jewish Commonwealth, and we show that we're not trusting in God. He says that the situation is not at all at the level of Pikuach Nefesh, and then the Netziv says, and I'm going to read this inside, "The life and existence of the Jewish nation are not merely based on natural causes, economic or otherwise, as are the life and existence of other nations. We can only exist because we are continually upheld and supported by the everlasting arms. The same applies to the land of Israel. It is different from all other countries, and the forces sustaining it are not the natural economic forces working in other states and communities. There is a special divine providence in the Holy Land, which works in a supernatural way. In order to earn the intervention of that divine providence, we must observe the special laws referring to the soil of the Holy Land and its produce, mitzvos hatluyos ba'aretz, such as trumos and maestros, and especially the law concerning the Shemitah year. And even according to those who hold that the Shemitah year applies in our days as rabbinic and not as Torah law, we must keep in mind that the ordinance of our sages referring to the Shemitah year was arranged in such a way that it should be kept in our time as if it were Torah law, Ke'ein Torah Tiknu. The Netziv, by the way, is of the opinion that Shemitah is D'oraisa today. Now, when Shemitah began in 1888, the rabbinate proclaimed that it must be kept, and later on during the year, they repeated the announcement and appealed for assistance for those that were keeping Shemitah. Rav Hirsch also opposed the Heter and held that Shemitah today is D'oraisa. Now I'll read Diane Grunfeld's words on this. It must have been painful for him, Rav Hirsch, to oppose a decision with which the Gaon of Kovno, Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, was connected in view of the close bond of friendship that existed between the two men. Shortly before Rav Hirsch's death, he made a public appeal for financial help for those settlers who kept the laws of Shemitah during the year of 5649, 1888, 1889. This was Rav Hirsch's last announcement in public. 1895 was the eve of the next Shemitah. The Rav of Yafo was Rav Tzvi Hertz, and he had a different difficulty with the Heter, in that one is not allowed to sell land in Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew. He did not agree that a temporary sale would be okay. On the other hand, he also saw the economic difficulties that were at hand, so he came up with a different legal device to get around the issue of selling the land. Rav Hertz suggested that one could sell the trees to a non-Jew who would cut them down. By doing this, there is no issue of selling the soil or any prohibition on the produce, so by doing this, the farmers could then sell the produce. Rav Diskin agreed to this, and it was only a heter for trees, and it was only for that one Shemitah of 1895, or 1896. In 1902, the economic conditions were still really poor, and Rav Hertz wanted to renew the heter, but in the interim, Rav Diskin had passed away, and some of the great Rabbanim did not support the Heter regarding the trees. He therefore turned to Rav Rabinowitz Tumim, the Aderet, this is Rav Cook's father-in-law. And in the end, this Heter was renewed for the 1903 Shemitah year. Moving on, and we're skipping a tremendous amount of detail and the specifics of this controversy, as well as the emotional aspect that was involved in this controversy, in 1910, the entire thing started over again. Rav Cook wanted to renew the original Heter Mechira, and he was opposed by Rav Chaim Berlin and Rav Diskin. This is the son of the former Rav Diskin. And I'm going to now read Rav Cook's arguments inside. So Dan Grunfeld writes, Rav Cook tried to give a halachic basis to the Heter, but he stressed again and again that the only purpose of this Heter was to prevent the collapse of the Yishuv, and that he was aware of the fact that the Heter was originally given in strained circumstances, b'shas hadchak. He repeatedly expressed his wish and hope that the settlers should return to the full observance of the laws of Shemitah as soon as possible. Rav Cook went so far as to say that every Jew who is in a position to observe the laws of Shemitah, even in strained circumstances, so long as he is not thereby forced to abandon his soil in the Holy Land and depart for other lands, is in duty bound to observe the Shemitah year in accordance with the law, and this would be considered a great merit, a zechus gedola, for the whole Jewish people. It is also of interest that Rav Cook, who always endeavored to further the export of agricultural products of the Holy Land, and therefore advised Jews in the diaspora to buy esrogim grown in Eretz Yisrael, refused to have anything to do with the export of esrogim during Shemitah year. And this in spite of the fact that for those who accept the validity of the Heter Mechira, the sanctity of the fruits of the Shemitah year, Kedushas Shavias, would not rest on these esrogim. In his personal life, Rav Cook meticulously observed the laws referring to the produce of Shemitah and its sanctity. Numerous passages in his publications make it quite clear that his approval of the Heter HaMechira was motivated by only one aim, to avoid the danger of the economic collapse of the Jewish settlement in Eretz Yisrael. The following passages from Rav Cook's works may be of interest in this connection. They are taken from an exchange of letters between Rav Cook and Rav Yaakov David Ridbaz, who was the author of a commentary on the Yerushalmi, and a further commentary on the standard work dealing with the laws of Shemitah by Rav Yisrael of Shklov, a student of the Gaon of Vilna, and one of the early pioneers of the Ashkenazi settlement in Eretz Yisrael just over 150 years ago. Rabbi Ridbaz was perhaps the strongest opponent of the Heter HaMechira pronounced by Rav Kook in 1910. During that exchange of letters, Rav Kook wrote, "I have said before that the halachic validity of the Heter HaMechira cannot be doubted. Nevertheless, this fact does not absolve us from our duty to seek out all opportunities the Almighty affords us and which enable our brethren who have settled in the Holy Land to observe Shemitah fully without having to resort to the Heter HaMechira and any part of the Holy Land, be it ever so small, where Jewish settlers keep the mitzvah of Shemitah in its entirety, kehilchasa, should be a cause of jubilation for us, as if we had discovered the greatest treasure. But far be it from us to level accusations against those Jewish settlers who make use of the Heter HaMechira. Although this Heter is not an ideal thing, and our hearts ache because of the deplorable plight of the Jewish settlers in our Holy Land, who are forced to take recourse to such legal devices which temporarily suspend the holy and beloved mitzvah of the Shabbos of the land. Nevertheless, what has been done out of dire necessity is perfect Torah, it's Torah Shlema, and it behooves the great sages of Yisrael to comfort those of our brethren who, with broken hearts, find themselves constrained to make use of such legal devices so that they should not appear as lawbreakers, God forbid, in their own eyes. To enlarge the Jewish settlement in the Holy Land is a religious duty that devolves upon all Jewish generations, and the strengthening of the Yishuv brings nearer our final redemption when we can fulfill the laws of Shemitah in its entirety." Rav Kook stressed that as yet the Yishuv had not been found worthy of the blessing promised in the Torah that I'm going to command my blessing upon you in the sixth year, and it will bring forth fruit for 3 years. In the circumstances, unless a halakhically valid possibility was found to ease the economic strain on the settlers, which would be caused by observing the laws of the Shemitah year, the existing Yishuv would be in danger. Moreover, the Jews outside Eretz Yisrael would be discouraged from settling there. And as the beginning of the final redemption depends on the number of Jews in the Holy Land, to be too strict with regard to the laws of Shemitah, which in our days is only rabbinic, would be self-defeating. Many will be discouraged from buying soil in the Holy Land. I myself have heard a number of would-be immigrants say that as the divine blessing of a threefold crop in the sixth year was not yet visible in the Holy Land, it would be impossible for a Jewish farmer to exist there without agricultural work being done during the Shemitah year. And if the settlers did such work, they would break the laws of Shemitah, therefore they would rather stay away from the Holy Land altogether. However, if we find a halachic solution to the Shemitah problem, then many will come to the Holy Land, and the more of our brethren who settle there, the more blessing will be showered upon our land from on high, the redemption will speedily come, and we shall be able to observe Shemitah fully, and thus be compensated for having had to rely on far-fetched legal devices, heterim rechokim. Now, regardless, the Ridbaz strongly opposed Rav Kook's heter, and in the introduction to his work, he writes as follows, "Our land, our holy land, we beg of you not to accuse your children before our Father in heaven on account of the perpetrated breaches of the law of Shemitah. Look upon the broken hearts of our sages and our holy people who shed tears of sorrow on account of the profanation of the Shemitah. We implore you to intercede on our behalf with our Maker, that he may have mercy upon us to redeem us speedily and gather the remnants of our people and bring them back to the Holy Land, so that they may observe the Shabbos of the land in holiness and in purity." Many Gedolim came out strongly against the Heter, but we also found those like Rav Yosef Engel who supported the Heter. After the Balfour Declaration, the settlements in Israel grew. The rabbinate continued to renew the Heter with the support of Rav Kook, who headed the rabbinate, and Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. In 1935, the Chazon Ish summarized all the arguments, and he concluded that the Heter is not valid and should not be followed. This concludes Shir 42 on the Heter Mechira. And next time, we will attempt to take a look at some of the halachic issues with the Heter Mechira.